Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Sataglia. Midterm elections are this Tuesday. To take a look at the races, our guest this week is political commentator Terry Madonna. Madonna is a professor of public affairs at Franklin and Marshall College and director of the Center for Politics and Public Affairs. He's also director of the Franklin and Marshall College poll, which came out with new polling numbers on Wednesday. WPSU's Emily Reddy talked with Madonna about the status of the governor's race and about other interesting matchups across the state.
The biggest race of this election is, of course, the race for governor. At one point, some polls showed Governor Tom Corbett as much as 25 or even 30 points behind his competitor, Tom Wolf. But that margin's been narrowing. In your poll on Wednesday, it was down to 13 points among likely voters.
Certainly, the polls in June of this year after the really contested Democratic primary showed Governor Corbett trailing significantly. I don't think that's in question. Some of the polls, 20% plus. Since that time, the independent polls done by, certainly those at colleges and universities have showed a tightening of the race. The Quinnipiac poll about 3 weeks ago at 17, the Franklin Marshall College poll released this week at 13. The basic reason for that is that Governor Corbett is now doing much better among, and this is important, Republican voters. He was significantly trailing among his own party's voters. But over the last 6 weeks or so, he's made a determined effort, especially by focusing on Tom Wolf's tax plan and criticizing that plan. And that's one of the major reasons why he's been able to, narrow the race now to, 11, 12, 13, certainly in that range.
I've started to get emails from Corbett's campaign that say that Wolf's plan will triple income taxes.
Right.
Wolf says that it will cut taxes for most people. Is there an objective reality here?
Yeah, the objective reality, let's start with the basic fact that Tom Wolf does not have the specifics that allow anyone to make a reasonable judgment about who will get taxed and at what rate. The income tax currently is at 3.07. It's fluctuated up and down over the last 30 years since it was enacted in 1971. But there's no way to reasonably know, and that's one of the criticisms of the Wolf plan, is that he's just not provided enough specifics. He talks in generalities about people somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000 in income would be exempt from the tax. Above 70 or 90, that's the range he's talked about, income tax would rise, the state income tax would rise. So we're trapped in that sort of fundamental problem. It makes a big difference if the income threshold is 70,000 or 90,000. Any way you look at it, once you move up into that range, we're probably talking about, 1.5 to 2.5 million people who would be exempt from paying the state income tax under the rough outline suggested and proposed by Tom Wolf. So it would make a difference where that threshold is and what people would pay. So the Corbett campaign has said, well, if you're going to exempt a huge number of people from it, that means those who are going to pay are going to have to pay significantly more. But no one knows for sure what the percentage rate would be and how many people would actually be exempt who pay the tax now but would not pay the tax under any plan that Tom Wolf would hope a reluctant state legislature would do.
Another thing your poll found was that 17% of voters were still undecided, and that was about a week or a little more out. What are they waiting for at this point?
Yeah. Well, I think you have to look at a bunch of indicators. If the electorate enlarges substantially, let's say that somehow, some way, people are encouraged to vote, that who aren't voting now, we're looking at a low turnout, then I think you get up into that upper ranges of, 15, 17%. If we look at what's more likely to happen, a lower turnout, then I think we're talking only about 5, 6, 7% of voters who haven't made up their mind. Most of us now who do polling are trying to figure out exactly what the turnout will be. We are looking at the moment at the lowest turnout in recent midterm elections. I don't think there's any doubt that that's likely to be the case. We could see turnout 43-44% of registered voters. If that's the case, then the number of people who are still outstanding, meaning those folks who have not made up their mind, is really probably only 5-7% in that range, probably not enough to make a difference in the outcome of the election.
And why is that turnout expected to be so low?
You know, that's an interesting question and one that I can only just sort of speculate about. Number one, I think, is that the campaign has been long, laborious, expensive, but not particularly exhilarating. In other words, the basic issues before the voters have not changed. For Corbett, it's been how to figure out how to deal with the narrative that he's cut education spending. For Wolf, it's been basically about whether he's a tax and spend liberal. Not a lot of sort of exciting, dynamic, controversial issues that are before the voters. The other factor, I think, is a little more debatable, perhaps, and that's we've got two candidates who are very workmanlike. I mean, no one would ever accuse either of them of being overly dramatic. I'm not criticizing them. I'm just pointing that out in terms of campaign style. We have no Ed Rendells or no Joe Biden. Joe Biden's running around the state. And so I think the campaigns have been pretty calm and deliberative. Nothing exciting, I mean, in terms of the hot button issues, social issues, not even discussed at all. What happened to debates over voter ID, although that's more than a social issue. It's goes to other questions. But what about gay marriage, abortion, gun control? I mean, these are issues that often excite voters, but we're not seeing virtually any discussion of those issues at the moment. The legislature did pass a law, and the governor signed it, that would allow individuals and organizations to sue municipalities that have gun control ordinances and variants with the state, but that still has not created a lot of excitement.
I think it's worth pointing out that it's actually going to be really unusual if Corbett is not elected to a second term.
No doubt. I mean, constitutionally in 1968, we allowed governors to seek re-election. We had earlier, by the way, in the very beginning of the state's history up to 1873, governors could seek re-election. From 1873 to the first governor who could, 1970, Milton Schaap, they could not seek re-election. Since Milton Schaap, every governor since then has sought re-election. Milton Schaap, Dick Thornburgh, Bob Casey, Tom Ridge, and Ed Rendell, and all of them won re-election. So as I like to put it, if Governor Corbett will make history on November 4, if he loses, no incumbent governor has been double digits behind a week from an election and won. In fact, no incumbent governor has been behind, period, at this point, behind in the polls. He will make history if he loses. He will be the first incumbent governor since the Constitution was changed in 1968 to lose re-election. So I think we're staring at history in one way or another on November 4.
Now, is there a chance that Corbett will still win?
Well, if you're, want to go to one of Pennsylvania's casinos and put a wager down, it would be a long shot. It's pretty difficult when you're down as far as the governor is right now to win. I have a long history of commenting on elections and writing about them, and I'm certainly not going to end elections. But it really is a tough road being this far down. There's almost no precedent for it. We're going to have to look very carefully at turnout, where voters turn out. The Democrats are very nervous, I think, nervous in relative terms about the turnout in the big cities, particularly in Philadelphia. That's why they've had this all-star lineup of Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, and President Obama, all three of whom will be in the state before November 4, Bill Clinton in Pittsburgh as well. The Democrats are doing everything they can to try to ratchet up the vote in the urban areas, particularly in Philadelphia, where no one expects the voter turnout to be very high. Republicans, on the other hand, need a huge vote out of the heartland of the state, and why I think we'll see a lot of emphasis on that as we head into the final weekend of the campaign.
And here in the heart of the state, how much do you think that the Sandusky case is going to affect votes?
I think it's a pretty important issue, particularly among, perhaps affecting Governor Corbett more would be about conservative Republicans in the heartland of the state in Center County, Juniata, Huntington, Blair, in lots of counties in and around State College where there are lots of Penn State alums, Penn State loyalists who are very upset, not just about Sandusky, but about the Louis Freeh report, about the Joe Paterno situation, probably now Paterno more than anyone else, about the sanctions. Governor Corbett accepted the sanctions, accepted the Freeh report, and I think that certainly caused him a considerable amount of political damage among Republicans who would normally be casting a vote for him. That's one of the reasons I think he not doing as well as past Republicans in the heartland of the state.
Now, looking forward to after the election, Governor Corbett has been criticized by members of his own party for passing very few conservative policies, even
Correct.
Though he has the House and Senate
Right.
controlled by the GOP. How is Wolf, as a Democrat, going to pass legislation with this Republican-controlled
Right.
Assembly?
How many different ways can you spell difficult? I don't think there's any doubt that Tom Wolf's agenda, which is not arguably an agenda that's filled with spending proposals. Wolf says he's going to do a lot with reorganizing priorities. The problem is that probably 85% of the state budget is pretty well fixed. It's very difficult to do anything about priorities that are already in law and fixed. I think he's going to have a very difficult time, particularly in the State House of Representatives. He wants to pass a personal income tax alteration, which has been a major part of the campaign. It's inconceivable to me that the State House of Representatives will pass a progressive income tax that could lead to higher tax rates for people earning $70,000 or $90,000 or more. The shale tax that Tom Wolf proposes, I think, has a reasonable chance of passing the House, given the fact that the state has a $2 billion structural deficit. The shale tax might have even an outside chance, you can't rule it out, of passage in the House, although three prominent House leaders at the moment, Republican House leaders, are opposed to a shale tax, creating another dilemma for Tom Wolf. I think Wolf says, he's going to sit down, reason with people, get everybody involved. Certainly these are wonderful suggestions, but I think he's going to have a very, very difficult time getting his agenda through the legislature, and we could very well have a good measure of gridlock.
You're listening to Take Note on WPSU. If you're just joining us, we're talking with political commentator Terry Madonna. In addition to the race for governor, WPSU's Emily Reddy talked with him about the 5th U.S. House District and some interesting state races.
Now, shifting to the congressional front, neither of Pennsylvania's two seats in the U.S. Senate is up for a vote this year, but you recently wrote an article about what could happen at the national level if we end up with a 50-50 split between Democrats and Republicans in the Senate. Why would this be problematic?
Well, it'd be problematic because anytime you get 50-50 votes, that means that Joe Biden, for the next 2 years, would be the presiding officer as president of the Senate, and it creates a situation where with literally one vote separating the chambers, separating the Democrats from the Republicans, it becomes, a more difficult governance problem for both the Senate in terms of reconciling, policies internally and also for the president. The likelihood that that occurs, I think, is, probably not as great now. Independent national analysts say that it looks now like the odds are that the Republicans will get the 6 seats. They could even get 8 seats and win control completely of the Senate. But you can't rule it out. But it becomes a interesting dilemma for the president's party in particular, trying to govern, trying to get anything done in the Senate with just, you know, the one vote edge, that vote being cast, of course, by Vice President Biden.
In the U.S. House, the district that covers most of the WPSU listening area is the 5th District. Incumbent Glenn Thompson is up against Brookville lawyer Kareth Strano Taylor. Approval ratings for Congress are at 14%, but this is a heavily Republican district, and an incumbent, as you know, is hard to beat. Does Taylor have a chance here?
Well, I don't think there's not a single independent analyst, again, national analyst or state analyst, that's indicated there's likely to be a change in not just the 5th Congressional District, but virtually any of them. There are 16 congressional incumbents throughout the state out of the 18 seeking reelection. The best guess that most of us have is that all of them will win, Democrats as well as Republicans. No one sees, yes, Congress's job performance is pathetically low, but most of these districts have been gerrymandered to a fault, and the 5th is a huge district sprawling across the northern tier of the state. It's even larger than a couple of states. All the national estimates and models indicate that that's a pretty safe Republican seat, as are the other 15 congressional races with incumbents seeking reelection. So no one is looking for a change there. No one at the state House and state Senate level in Pennsylvania is indicating at the moment that there's likely to be a change in the control of the state legislature, which I think will remain in Republican hands. Outside of the governor's election, this is a real status quo election, meaning that despite the anger and angst, it now looks like these seats will be pretty safe for incumbents.
I think it's interesting, as I was researching, as far as I can tell, there's no polling for these races.
That's exactly
I mean,
right.
Is there any room for a surprise upset for these seats? I mean, Eric Cantor was widely expected to win his primary and lost. Of course, it was against someone in his own party.
Right. American politics is a little weird right now. I think everybody would admit that. And there's lots of sort of undefinable considerations, or at least questions that we raise. Can you rule out something like an unimaginable upset at the moment? No. But if the odds are not in, you know, don't go there. You can't figure out a way to make those odds work. But there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt that most of these incumbents are safe. And the reason there aren't polls is that the polls cost money. And in safe districts, you know, it's not a good, no, it's problematic as to why you should, you know, spend the money to do the polls unless someone is willing to pay for them. Now, there's some polls done by party-oriented pollsters, some of whom are working for the candidates themselves, and so we have to be skeptical of them, but but having said that, I'll say this. There's always an upset somewhere. There's always something we didn't think would occur. Can we rule that out in a Pennsylvania House or Senate race or a Pennsylvania congressional race? No. Is it likely to occur? No.
Another thing that makes these upsets difficult is just the cost of running one of these congressional campaigns. The average cost today is $1.4 million. I mean, with these incumbents likely to win almost every race, will we ever see real campaign finance reform?
Not as long as incumbents control the process, because the incumbency advantage, as you accurately point out, in fundraising and other material advantages, constituent service and newsletters and staffers who are omnipresent helping people out, and the lack of really issues that determine vote choice, I don't think for any time in the future we're going to see significant public finance reform. The current system favors the incumbents, and they're going to keep it.
And to just take a look at how much it favors, in 2012, 90% of U.S. House and Senate members who sought reelection won their seats. What that says, according to some pundits, is that Americans are dissatisfied with Congress as a whole, but not necessarily with their own representative. I mean, how strong is that pull to favor your own representative?
Well, now, actually, there are polls now that show that even incumbents are not, you know, are that voters are not satisfied with their own incumbents. But I don't see anything at the moment that's likely to change that. But the disenchantment has now spread to individual members. But my sense is that there's not enough angst and anger and third-party activity or independent activity, you know, independent candidacies, except in a couple of these Senate races, national Senate races, to make much of a difference. I think the bottom line here is, yes, there's anger, yes, there's angst, yes, there's record levels of dissatisfaction, but I just think the voters are more fatalistically resigned to the current situation and that their vote doesn't change very much, and that's the current attitude.
Since the last midterm election, we've seen some redistricting. The 5th District, with the one with Glenn Thompson and Kareth Starno-Taylor, is one of the ones that's recently been redistricted.
Right.
It now reaches down into Huntingdon County and then well up into Erie County. It's about a four-hour drive. It seems like there must be quite a few legislators learning their new districts and voters who might go to the polls on Tuesday and find that the representative they're used to has been replaced by someone new.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. I mean, these districts were in place in 2012 when people voted. The bigger reason is that the district was moved out to include a part of Erie to help another Republican out in the western, out in the western part of the state in the 3rd congressional district. So the basic reason for these adjustments are really to sort of help incumbents elsewhere, particularly where the 5th is concerned. So you have to think about that. If you have a district that's heavily skewed towards one party or the other, you can adjust it a bit, help someone else in your own party by giving them a few of those parties' voters to assist them, and that's basically what happened to Glenn Thompson's district. But look, it's a huge district, as I indicated before. Several states could fit into it, but it's been a pretty large district through a number of the redistrictings, and that's not likely to change. But I agree, it's really tough when you have a big district like that to provide constituent service for the individual residents who live there to have any kind of a relationship with their member of Congress, given the geographic size of the district. It's almost unmanageable geographically.
One of the most interesting state-level races is probably the 81st State House District. That's the race between Mike Fleck and Richard Ervin. Do you want to explain that one?
Yeah, I mean, basically what happened there is that Mike Fleck, and the first openly gay Republican in the legislature, when he announced it, didn't create a kind of immediate reaction by the voters of the district. He thinks, and he's asserted on the record, that that's probably the reason he lost the write-in for his nomination. He failed to get the nomination through the traditional route of filing the papers and get on the ballot, and there was a write-in. The folks who disagree with him say he lost because he moved away from his Republican conservative roots and voted a much more moderate or liberal agenda. So there's a back and forth about what the nature of his loss is. And without getting into the details of that, he wins the Democratic write-in nomination, loses his own party's nomination in a district that's pretty heavily Republican. So it's probably a tough hill fight just because of the party distinctions, registration distinctions, much less the degree to which the gay marriage issue and his status is at play in a conservative district. It's hard to know exactly how much that's played a role. He thinks it's played a big role. Others indicate no, but we just don't know for sure. But he certainly is going to be in a really tough fight. And if you would look for one place where an incumbent might lose, that could be the place to look.
And in the 71st district, that's the Johnstown area, this looks like it could be a pretty close race. Democratic incumbent Brian Barbin is being challenged by Republican right. James Rigby of right. Ferndale. Rigby lost to Barbin by just 1% in 2010. Are there any indications on how that race will turn out?
This is going to turn out voter efforts. This is an election in which Republicans are slightly more motivated statewide. This is also an area of the state that is becoming increasingly Republican over the last several decades, formerly a Democratic area of the state. These are where the Reagan Democrats came along. These are socially conservative Democrats. The current House member is certainly, Democratic House member is certainly not a liberal. But there is one place we might look, given the overall configuration of the voters and their intentions. And this looks like a slightly better year for Republicans in that part of the state than we saw in 2012. But we also have new district boundaries for the legislature playing out this time. So this could be, you know, this could be another place where we conceivably could see a change.
And what other races should the residents of Central Pennsylvania be paying attention to?
You got me. I think you covered them. I don't know of any other than, you know, those two House races, which I think, and there's a Senate race, you know, a senator retired, and there's a big fight going on. There's $1.7 million that have been raised. You might want to look into that. I've not paid a lot of attention, but I've heard some thought that that's a seat that could flip to the Democrats, or to the Republicans.
It seems like it's worth mentioning that there are a lot of uncontested races in this election, as it seems there often are.
Yeah, there are 105, there are 186 state House members seeking re-election. There are 105 current state House members who don't have an opponent. And so that's why we're indicating we're going to see re-election rates maybe in the 95% range for state House members. State senators, I think there are three state senators out of 20 incumbents seeking re-election who don't have an opponent, but many of them have drawn token opponents, whether they be Democrats or Republicans. So one of the reasons that we're going to see a low turnout is just a dearth of competition once you get below the governor's race, where so many elections are unopposed, so many conditions exist where there's not a lot of healthy competition, and that's all going to lead to, I think, a low turnout.
Terry Madonna, thank you for talking with me.
My pleasure.
WPSU's Emily Reddy spoke with political commentator and Franklin and Marshall College pollster Terry Madonna about Tuesday's elections. For Take Note, I'm Patty Satalia.